If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where our guest today is a leading member of a group of young British riders already hailed as a new golden generation to succeed and perhaps even surpass the likes of Wiggins, Cavendish, Thomas et al. This year, 23-year-old Fred Wright lit up both the Tour de France and Vuelta a España with relentlessly competitive displays, earning 11 top 10 finishes and 3 podiums across the two Grand Tours. For much of this summer, his red Bahrain Victorious jersey was seemingly everywhere. It's not only Wright's tenacious riding that has earned him so much attention, however. His raw post-stage interviews, joyfully unscripted, were wonderfully refreshing. Even with the disappointment of a near miss in his breast, Wright's unquenchable optimism shone through. His unshakable belief that the big win will come has won him legions of admirers. Wright encapsulates two shifts in professional racing. Firstly, the willingness of World Tour teams to give young riders opportunities to express themselves, and secondly, the return of racing with panache. It's thanks to Wright and riders like him that the days of suffocating racing are largely over. Any breakaway he instigates is likely to stay away. Wright's career is built on the pillars of British cycle sport's most established institutions, Herne Hill Velodrome, a venerable club in VC Londres, and British Cycling's Olympic Academy. He has never acquired the support of the Rayner Foundation, but might be considered an honorary Rayner rider, and will be a guest at the Foundation's annual dinner and charity auction on November the 12th. Fred, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Wow, that is, that was a big, nice, big introduction. I must say that was,
All of it true though. All of it true.
That was nice. Really nice.
I mean, just to pick up on this point that, you know, young riders, of course, being given a chance in the World Tour these days, that story's pretty well told, the Remco effect. But sort of hand in hand with that, it seems that, you know, we've got back some really exciting racing these days. The days of the doomed television breakaway have gone, haven't they? Riders just out front to get a bit of television time for the jersey. Guys like yourself are really driving breakaways with purpose. Where do you think that's coming from?
That's a good question. I don't know, you know. I think it's, that's a good one. I've not really been asked. Like you said, the sort of scripts maybe changed a little bit. And I don't know if there's just generally more pressure on teams to perform. Like older riders sort of say that there's less respect in the peloton. I can sort of see where they're coming from, but I almost think it's just maybe the way, I think the sport's maybe changing a little bit. And I think that's, I'm sure back when they were my age, that there were the older riders then that would be saying the same thing. It's an interesting one. You know, I'll keep trying to find opportunities where I can. I think the sport's in a great place in that sense. Everyone wants to take an opportunity and they're not afraid to take opportunities just because there's a thinking about the breakaways working and whatever. I think it makes it more exciting to watch, basically.
100%, yeah. I mean, whatever that's driving that change, it's a change for the better. You know, the days of even sort of 10 years ago, you know, with sort of Sky, typically controlling the race, suffocating the race. Those days are gone, aren't they, with guys like yourself? Well, Van Aert on the attack every day at the Tour de France. Van der Poel did the same at the Giro. But wonderful to watch.
If it's great to watch, then it's good for the sport, isn't it? So that's ultimately what we're doing is intended to be entertainment. So let's make it as entertaining as possible.
Brilliant. Well, you've certainly delivered your fair share of entertainment this year. Let's go right back to the beginning. I mean, how did you get into this sport? I mentioned Herne Hill there right at the top. I think that was your entry point.
Yeah, so I started there probably at one of the summer holiday clubs when I was 8, probably. Yeah, 8 or 9. And basically just started on the track. I actually did a bit of riding on my mountain bike as well. I was riding on the track. But I was quite good at the track straight away. I was like, oh, I'm... You know, I could tell as an 8 or 9 year old kid, I was like, oh, this is actually, I'm quite good at this. You know, I had loads of friends and people that would go to the summer holiday club. And I think it was just that perfect mix of, you know, finding something that you're good at and the other side of it, which was just being able to go to a place and sort of mess around with your friends. That got me really into the sport.
Were you good at other sports, Fred? Or was cycling that sport that you've been searching for in a way?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was quite sporty in general, and like loved doing different sports, like running and playing football. But it was that was just cycling was like really a bit like, oh, okay, this is actually, yeah, I am, yeah, quite good at this. If I did play for the school team, I'm pretty sure I played left back or right back. So yeah, I was never gonna go anywhere in playing football.
You loud and clear. And in fact, most cyclists I know are pretty awful footballers at school.
I'd like to think I'd be better than your average cyclist at playing football. Football match with pro cyclists, I'd be in the top sort of 25%. I'd be in the top quarter of cyclists that would play football.
Well, I'm sure the Premier League clubs will be listening in just in case there's a late opportunity to sign you. Is it clear sort of what type of rider you become? And in fact, it's probably a fair question to ask, is it still unclear what type of rider you become? I mean, you were second at the Commonwealth Games time trial this year to Rowan Dennis and ahead of Geraint Thomas. You're more than a useful time trialist. You were a very strong track rider. It would be wrong to hold you as a breakaway specialist, wouldn't it?
Because I started on the track, it was always something that I wanted to do in my head. It was go to the Olympics on the track and then pursue a career on the road. Obviously, that didn't work out that way. Yeah, I wasn't, you know, quite good enough potentially at team pursuit, but then when I was sort of second year under 23, things on the road started to click a lot more, and it sort of became clear that actually it's almost time to switch. I still have that dream of doing track at the Olympics, but I think, you know, I kind of had to switch to being like, okay, that's not going to work out. I'm going to try and get myself a pro contract. Yeah, I'm really glad that it has worked out the way it has, because I think I'm in such a great position on the road now, and also potentially going to try and do a little bit more track coming up in the winter. It's all been confirmed that me and Ethan are going to do 6 days of Ghent, which should be really good fun. So I'm looking forward to that.
Just as a fan of the sport, that's absolutely wonderful. I mean, any of our listeners who've ever been to the Ghent Six, it's wow, what an amazing experience. And for you and Ethan to pair up for that, that's incredible.
There's always been loads of people from Herne Hill going to Ghent. It's going to be pretty special. I think I was saying something the other day, I think actually the things I wanted to do when I was a bit younger, Tour de France was up there, but also Ghent 6 Day was up there. So I think it's actually, I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely wonderful to hear that. You mentioned almost immediately you had that sensation, well, I'm pretty good at this, I can do this. Was that feeling sort of pretty rapidly cemented?
Not quite realising maybe how strong I am. Even now, I kind of sometimes sort of underestimate myself. But, you know, obviously I always know that a certain level at cycling, but it's that next level, I think, that I maybe don't quite have that belief in myself. But my dad always says we turned up to like a regional Omnium maybe when I was like 11, 10 or 11. Yeah, you start with like a 2-lap time trial. And this was like my first time doing anything other than like racing at Herne Hill or whatever. You know, we weren't really sure how was it going to go. My dad was a bit nervous, like, oh, what if he's not very good? And I think, you know, straight away, like, oh, okay. Because that first 2-lap time trial, I won or whatever, and it was like, right, he's quite good at this. This year has been a turning point in that. I think I really do think that I can do what I want to do in the sport. But before that, maybe I wasn't so sure.
What about winning the Junior Tour of Wales? I mean, that must have been a real confirming moment. I mean, you look at the history of the riders that have won that race. It's incredible. That must have been a real mark in the ground.
That's a weird one again, because at the time it was a bit of a shock because of the way the race panned out. I ended up in a break the last day, and obviously because Ethan was my teammate and he was leading on the last day up the tumble, the break ended up getting quite a big gap. And so I won it because I was in the breakaway. But at the time it was like, oh, he won the Tour of Wales. I think now, looking back at that, I feel I'm almost more proud of that than I think I was at the time, which is interesting. You know, like looking back at the riders that won Tour of Wales, like, oh yeah, I won Tour of Wales when I was a junior. That means, yeah. It almost feels like it's a bigger thing now than it was at the time. I don't know.
It's a veritable who's who is the winners list of that race. The legacy continues, doesn't it? It's the ultimate junior race in a way. You mentioned going to Portsmouth there with your dad. What role has your family played in your career?
A massive role. And I think, you know, I owe so much to my parents for sort of taking me up and down the country. You know, whether the races went well or badly, it was never we're not going to go up to Blackpool or whatever. It's a sport that's not that easy to get into, and it does require a certain amount of financial support. And, you know, to begin with, I think I was sort of maybe a little bit limited with you know, my dad put together a bike that was, you know, he said how great it was, but I don't think it was the, when I was racing in Assen, I don't think it was the best bike, but I think that's almost a good thing to sort of be limited in that regard. But, you know, you do have to have that level of financial support, and I'm so grateful for that, and I will forever be grateful for that. I think that's kind of where the sports, it's almost getting more expensive, I think, I can imagine.
Fair point, and a legitimate concern. I remember years ago talking to Roger Hammond, who was saying they should just ban carbon wheels in junior races because the cost is astronomical and most families can't afford that, which is, you know, I thought at the time is a fair point. And as you say, it's not getting any cheaper, isn't it?
I don't know what the solution is, but there's a lot of potential there to try and make the sport more accessible because, you know, I still had parents that could take me to all these races. And, you know, this is before I had the support of British Cycling and stuff, which again, that helped a lot because, you know, I started getting sports aid grants and things like that. And then once the ball's rolling there, you almost, it's a bit easier to keep up with everything. But that initial, you know, when you're sort of 14, 15, trying to be better as a junior or whatever, I think it's, yeah, I'm so grateful to her. Just think of one trip with my mum where I went to Blackpool for under 14 national circuit champs and I was feeling a bit unwell and I didn't finish because I was unwell. My mum drove all the way up to Blackpool for this race. So that was a long trip.
Very long way from London. How about the coaches that have played a particular role in your career? Stuart Blunt, of course, has overseen what people are starting to call a golden generation. Matt Bramier, are these people who've influenced your career?
Yeah, I think, again, I've been so fortunate to have people like Stuart. You know, first sort of Stuart, then it was almost after Stuart on the academy, it was more like Keith, I'd say. Keith Lambert, who's the reason I'll be at the Dave Rayner dinner. You know, he supported guys like Jake and me and also on the academy when we first got on. And then Matt Bramier after that. But also, you know, Keith was still working for BC far beyond. He was always working so hard for BC. Very impressive.
I mean, it's almost the sort of classic education, the club, full 3 years with British Cycling Senior Academy. Then the top under 23 races, you know, under 23 Paris-Roubaix, Baby Giro, Tour de l'Avenir. You rode the Tour de Yorkshire, I think, is still quite a young rider in 2018 and the Tour of Britain. Is that how it feels? Does it feel like the classic British cycling education?
I'd say so, just without the bit that I maybe envisioned when I was sort of 14, which was going to an Olympics, or it never quite went where I wanted it to go on the track. But, you know, it was quite clear that the year that did the Baby Giro and Tour de l'Avenir that, you know, I could, you know, mix it up in breakaways on the road and was like strong on the road. I mean, yeah, I think it was Bramier actually that sat me down in sort of March, February time of that year and sort of said, oh yeah, Fred, I think you could get a road contract. And I sort of didn't quite realise, even then I didn't sort of realise what he meant. I thought he was sort of talking about going to an under 23 road team. I didn't quite realise that he was saying you should join a World Tour pro team. By the end of that year, I was riding for this team. But, you know, even in March of that year, I didn't think I would be. So I think that's kind of my general thinking is always like, oh, you did that introduction talking about the welter and the tour. I almost have a bit of like, is it imposter syndrome? I don't know. It's like a kind of, I don't, you know, especially now because I've just had a 4 week break and I'm riding my bike and feeling absolutely rubbish and everything. I think I just look back then and just think, yeah, that doesn't feel like me. It feels like a different Fred, right? Maybe I'm just go through phases of being different versions of myself.
Sort of Superman character. You put on the Bahrain kit and you're a different Fred, right?
Well, I was in Bahrain kit on my bike yesterday and I will be today and I didn't feel very good. So maybe it's something else.
Was Bahrain, was that the sort of ultimate British Cycling Academy connection? Was Rod running the team when you were signed?
You know, I signed with Rod when it was started off as Barry McLaren. And, you know, initially was that second year, I was a bit worried after he'd left for Ineos, thinking, oh, is it going to be any different? But, you know, I think they've really sort of taken his approach to doing things into that year and this year as well. And I feel really part of the family and part of the team. I think I'm really happy there, basically. I think it's a really, you know, we got big ambitions after last year. Maybe it wasn't quite as good as the year before. And I've definitely found my place in the team. And, you know, now I'm kind of one of the key riders in the team, which is really exciting. You know, again, looking back to the year I joined the team, I didn't think that after 3 years with the team, I'd be, you know, one of the guys to ride for. So it's really exciting, especially looking into the classics and stuff next year. And then what comes after that?
We haven't even mentioned the classics. We've talked almost exclusively as if you're a Grand Tour rider. You were top 10, of course, at Flanders, a rider of your strength. You know, the classics would seem to be a natural fit. Is that at the top of your to-do list to do well in the monuments?
I think, you know, to begin with, especially for the next 3 years that I signed with the team, I really, really liked the way that my seasons worked for the past 2 years. It's quite scary because, you know, when you do the same thing, I pretty much had the same season this year as the year before. I mean, there was COVID a little bit this year and stuff, but it was largely the same. And I want to do the same pretty much for the next 3 years, but it does mean it goes quite fast when you do the same, when you kind of repeat the same things, it almost rolls into it. Like, I almost can't believe that I've done 3 years pro now. It's like, it goes quickly once you get up into the ranks. But no, I really want to do the classics and the tour again next year is what I'm thinking. I still need to sort of finalize with what the team were thinking, but find out more about it in December. But yeah.
I just wonder where the sort of need to win comes in. Is that part of your mindset? I mentioned at the top there the visceral disappointment in the post-stage interviews that have done so much to endear you to cycling fans around the world, that your disappointment was absolutely tangible. And yet at the same time, what was equally obvious was this uncrushable spirit that tomorrow would be another day and you'd go again the following day. And it was just so inspiring. Do you get on a bike with the need to put your hands in the air at the end of the day, or is there something different that drives you?
With me, it's not, I kind of know that I don't quite have that, I have to win and there's no other option. I'm not quite at that point. Put me in that scenario and of course I want to win more than anything else in the world when you're in that position. But I think, you know, just on a day-to-day sort of training basis, I think if you obsess over winning when you're training, especially in this sort of period now, kind of almost take it on a, not a day-to-day basis, but I'm not looking too far in the future and kind of almost, I just sort of surprise myself in a way. Like, I'm like, oh, I am going well, but I kind of don't, whatever I've got, the kind of positivity-wise and maybe not wanting it so much when I'm training every day-to-day means that I've got a bit more, I can train better almost because I'm just taking it day-by-day training and not pushing myself too hard and kind of, I think you can train more productively if you're kind of know, understand yourself and understand. I don't know, I'm waffling here, but
I wondered sort of how that fed into your style of riding on the road, that you're a guy that can make things happen for himself. The rider that needs to win typically is the rider that's protected. His entire world collapses when he loses and he's on the highest of high when he wins. You know, you have a different approach. You make things happen for yourself. You don't need eight guys to open a door for you with 200 meters to go. You can get in the breakaway. You can shape your race. And I wondered if that in any way tied into your sort of attitude to winning and losing.
That's a fair point. I think but then again, I don't know, because next year, I think I probably will. One of the stages of the world where I was second to Pedersen in the sprint at the end, you know, that was the first time where I had a team like riding for me and helping me. That was such a cool experience to be having Mikel Landa riding on the front on a climb just to try and to drop the other sprinters while I, you know, I'm telling it then on the radio, just go a bit easier, please. But no, I think like that, for example, was great. And I'm really looking forward to having more opportunities to, you know, but I can see how there is a lot of pressure with that when it doesn't go so well. So I think owning it is something that I'm going to have to try and... The one day this year where I definitely should have won the race was the stage 7 of the Vuelta. That was the one day where I definitely know that I messed up. I think the others, I understand how maybe I messed up in the others, but I don't think I would have done anything differently in the race scenario itself. But in that stage 7 of Vuelta, I know that I definitely could have played that sprint a lot better because I was the fastest guy there. And I think that was the first time where I really felt like, you know, like seeing the team and everything after that, they really, everyone, okay, they were trying their best to, you know, support me in that, but you could see the disappointment on everyone's faces and they didn't have to say anything for me to be like, wow, that, yeah, I really wish I'd won that. You know, I think that's, I understand that, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, looking back now, that doesn't last forever. I'm already now looking for the next race. And, you know, maybe I'll get to the end of my career and I'll be like, oh, I wish I'd won that stage of the world. But I don't think I'll be saying that after a few more years. Hopefully should have won a stage by then. Who knows?
Absolutely no question about that. The other side of disappointment is resilience. You're almost the embodiment of that. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That you're perpetually willing to come back and try again. We saw that all summer. Is that a quality you've always had, or is that something you've discovered through the disappointment of near misses?
Not fully realizing how good I am, maybe, is what means I kind of go, oh yeah, I'll try this, see what happens. I think that because of that, of how I am and my belief in myself or whatever, I think I'm more likely to just be like, yeah, let's give it a crack and keep plugging away and see what happens. And I think that's what I was trying to say with the training and everything, is I will just keep plugging away because I have a good understanding of myself, what I can do. So let's try and push that as much as I can, really. And just, yeah, take each race as it comes.
I think that will be the most fascinating aspect, Fred, of watching your career develop as you develop that self-confidence. We'll see that unfold on the road. You've spent almost a lifetime in cycling. Do you feel like you've ever sort of missed out on the everyday experiences of teenage life and life in your early 20s? Or are you living the dream here?
Again, it's an interesting one because, you know, I've had 4 weeks off where I went out, drank quite a lot. And each off season, I've had done a good fair share of having fun, basically. And I do get to each, you know, after the first week of, say, let's talk this off season, the first week, you're like, oh, wow, I'm loving off season. This is great. I'm seeing my friends, I'm going to the pub, whatever. And by the fourth week, you start just to feel really, I just feel rubbish. Like, I just feel. Yeah, but by week four, you're just there, so happy to be back in the routine. Like, even this week, I'm not riding my bike, you know, slowly getting back into it. So I'm doing literally 12 hours on my bike this week, which is not much at all. You know, going to the gym a bit, but yeah, basically not doing much at all. But it still feels so good to get back into a routine and start feeling healthy again, because, yeah. Personally, I think that's the best way to do it. I think you have to switch off. I think even in my breaks in the season, I'd switch off, maybe not to the same extent as off-season, but I think what I did really well last year was in between the big races I was doing, is I had significant periods of just forgetting about cycling and doing almost what you want to a certain extent. I think you can get so obsessive with your weight and things like that in cycling. I think it's really important to try and, because even I like think about my weight or whatever a lot more than your average person does. So I think it's definitely important to enjoy your time. And I've gone away from what your question was, but I did definitely feel like I missed out a bit with, you know, friends going to uni and stuff. But I'd like to think I've done well at getting enough of that to sort of make me realise why my job is the best job in the world.
Absolutely. And I wonder if your friendship group are also your professional peers, you know, guys like Ethan, Jake Stewart, Matt Walls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Has that helped, the fact that basically you are living the life of a bunch of young guys as well as the life of a bunch of elite athletes?
I think that's what was great about being part of the British Cycling Academy. It was almost, you know, a little bit like going to university. It is slightly different. You know, you're put in a position where you have to get on with these people. You know, you almost have to be mates with these other cyclists, which obviously I was. I'm not saying that I don't like any of them, but I just think it is quite a particular situation. Like, if someone was on a uni course, they don't necessarily hang out with the people that do their course. They hang out with whoever they want. It was great. We had such a laugh. I think it was if I could speak to some of the people on the academy or whatever, I'd definitely say that you don't kind of realize when you're in it how good it is and how much fun you have. Okay, we were in Belgium or Italy or whatever, kind of feeling a bit lost, but actually that was part of the fun of just messing around.
Did that make you grow up fast, the fact that you were placed in that position of responsibility? I guess you're funded by the academy, they clearly have high hopes for you. Or did you feel that, you know, you had that time to develop as a person as well as an athlete?
Yeah, I think, you know, those sort of experiences, and also experiences, I guess, with any kind of British riders that go over to Europe or join the team in Europe, I think you do have to grow up pretty quickly. And I think, but that's why, I almost think that's one of the reasons why pro teams are getting more and more interested in British riders, because not only are, like, my generation of riders doing really well, I think there's that kind of focus and maturity that you sort of have to develop from a young age as a British rider. I think teams really like, they see that sort of dedication and they're a big fan of it. So if I'd say anything, I'd say to pro teams to sign more British riders. There's so many pros. I think Luke had mentioned it at Worlds, like that the amount of British pros now compared to previously is crazy. And I only see it getting you know, more and more, which is exciting.
It's extraordinary how that's changed within a period of about 20 years. It's absolutely amazing. Just finally, a word for the Rayner Foundation, Fred. I know you've never required their support, but clearly it's an organisation you admire, and you'll be there at the dinner on November the 12th.
Yeah, I never got that support, but then I was supported by British Cycling, so I didn't need it. But I think had things have changed and I joined a team in Europe or whatever, I know that support would have been there, which is really nice. And I can just sort of see how much it's helped, you know, guys like Jake, and there's just so many. You kind of talk about the success of guys that have gone pro, but I think it's also important to talk about just, you know, in general, the experience that Dave Rayner gives people that they might not make it, but, you know, you become a better person. And I think in general, I think even at my local club, I think it's not just about making people that are pro cyclists. It's just about making better people. And I think that's what these sort of organisations do, which is really nice.
You make a superb point there. You know, cycling makes better people. It also produces wonderful athletes, but the bottom line is it produces better people, and who would disagree with that? Fred, thank you very much indeed for your time today. I hope you have a wonderful time at the dinner on November the 12th, and wish you every success for 2023.
Thank you very much. I'm a little bit gutted that the post-dinner antics that I've heard about might not be the same, because I'm off to Ghent 6, like not so long afterwards, but we shall see.
A small price to pay.
Yeah, a small price to pay. It's all good.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.